What I wanted to do today was just to give you an update on football's work, English football's work. So it's not just about the FA, but some of our other stakeholders, but also show you some of our educational materials that we're working with clubs on. And hopefully that will give you a sense of, you know, the direction of travel around inclusion, diversity and equality. So, as was previously mentioned, I look into inclusion and diversity matters within the Football Association. That's quite a broad brief, but it's not just my brief alone. There's a couple of us working on this topic, and it's really important that certainly the way the FA is currently figured and the way the English football's landscape is currently figured, that the focus is really about embedding inclusion, which is probably the hardest part of diversity work. You know, the game has moved a long way in terms of recognising differences. However, there's still a lot of work to be done, so it's not quite job done, as some of the headlines showed 2 weeks ago through FIFA. But nevertheless, you know, we're all committed to making sure the game remains for everybody, remains inclusive for everybody. And a large chunk of my job is to deliver on some specific diversity projects, which I'll share with you this afternoon. So these are the topic matters that I'm going to at least provide you with an update, and there are some relevance in terms of why you're all here today and tomorrow as well. But like with everything, we have an overarching plan, an action plan, which is a whole game. So I'll talk about that a little bit more. I'll also talk about our work in terms of the Football Association. So, you know, the aspects of that plan and what we have committed ourselves to delivering. Obviously, being the governing body, it's important that we provide leadership, we provide direction, but we're also honest and transparent where we are along that journey. So it's important, certainly, the FA positions itself, as well as working with a number of stakeholders who are passionate about inclusion and want to ensure, you know, not just football, but sport remains for everybody. With that, you can't talk about football, not talk about the grassroots football. It's our national sport. And it's important that, you know, certainly I bring to your attention some key interventions that we're looking at to deliver on around grassroots. There are some emerging work that we're also developing. I won't talk too much about that, but largely because Michael Bennett is here from the PFA to talk about some of the mental health aspect of work that football is doing. So I'll just kind of top line on that one. But more importantly, you know, why I'm here is also to talk about this very good and strong partnership that we have with the English Football League around education, particularly around highlighting inappropriate behaviour and how to challenge them and what does good look like. And like with any workforce, it's important that, you know, we are open to learning, and that's something certainly across the game. Anyone and everyone who's in working and volunteering in football, we try and make sure that, you know, we all have a consistent way of understanding what good looks like and how to role model that. And to finish everything off, which is the interactive bit, albeit you'll be seated, I'm going to show you the some very, well, short films that we've developed as part of our education offer within the English Football League. They speak for themselves. They actually form part of a three-hour workshop that we deliver, but obviously, you know, I can't deliver that this afternoon, but there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be exposed to those films. And it's just a chance and an opportunity for you to reflect on those messaging and also to kind of see how that works within your own constituent areas as well. So, moving on, in terms of English football's work, and this is something that certainly is part of post today, I'm more than happy to share this through a PDF. The football has developed an action plan around inclusion, equality and diversity. It's all set out in this booklet. It's downloadable from our website, and it is a whole game approach. This is not just about our work as in the FA, but all the constituent parts within football, whether that's the Premier League, the English Football League, the League Managers Association, the Professional Footballers Association, the Professional Game Match Officials. So all the major stakeholders, what is termed the football authorities, I've all committed to actions in this plan. So it's very much a whole game approach. That's very new for football. I don't know why it took us that long to have that light bulb moment. We're all trying to get to the same place, and yet collaborating together makes good sense. It means we can share our resources, we can build on our infrastructure, and it means that, you know, we can actually celebrate success and recognise what that is and also own the challenges that we have within the game. So this plan is the go-to plan to understand where football's inclusion work is. There are four goals in this plan. It's a very simple plan. The first one is about widening football's talent pool. It's really, really, really fundamental that football reflects not only wider society, but also reflects the people involved, engaged in the game. So what we mean by that is that there are, particularly in the decision-making structures of the game, there are very few women, there are very few black and Asian and minority ethnic communities involved in those big roundtable discussions, whether that be various boardrooms, the FA, the Premier League. It's really important that we all have a duty of care to widen the talent pool. So that's one goal that across the game we're all committed to. The other one is about clarifying football's anti-discrimination regulations. We can't expect people to have confidence in what we do. Sorry, is it me? Is it? Sorry about that. Is it me?
Can we use the one that's a backup?
The handout. Okay. I'm happy to stick to the old blue eyes. Right. It's really important as I suppose the governing body for us to instill confidence in people reporting discrimination and poor behaviour. That's why, you know, clarifying our anti-discrimination regulations is fundamental to this action plan. The next goal is about instilling confidence. If we can't instill confidence, then people won't come forward. If people don't come forward, we don't know. If we don't know, we can't investigate. If we can't investigate, we can't take appropriate action. So all of those elements are interlinked. That's why there's a large, large focus in terms of instilling confidence. How we do that is by making sure that people know where to go to report discrimination or to report poor behaviour or to report what has happened to them. But equally, it's important that we listen and investigate to come to a conclusion. And sometimes that conclusion goes either way, but we should always, always come from the victim perspective. And sometimes fining, sanctioning, and another element we've added is about education. Actually, those three elements go hand in hand. Anyone who infringes our regulations, not only do we ban them, and dependent on the severity of that issue, that goes with the ban. I mean, I won't necessarily kind of talk about John Terry and Luis Suarez, but that was the start of really making sure that our regulations were watertight, but we also made sure that we kind of evoke and look and investigate. So anyone could get anything between 5 to 10 match bans or more, dependent on the severity. We also fine them. When I say them, players, regardless, male, female, or referees or coaches. But the element which was always missing over the years was around education. How do you correct behaviours if you don't educate? So that's the three elements to making sure that there's a pure, clear understanding of our regulatory framework. And the last goal is really about raising awareness and education. You know, we're never too old to learn, and it's really important that football takes a step back at times to understand the current landscape. The landscape which we operate in is fundamentally different to what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. We have former players here who know that the landscape has, you know, it's different. But that doesn't mean to say that our job has been done, but we need to know how things were in the past. So that's why it's important to educate. And people like Paul, yourself, it's important that we use past players to tell that story. So building on from that is leadership. All of what I've said means absolutely nothing if there isn't clear leadership from us within the FA, and likewise with all the parts of football. So, you know, whether it's our chief exec, whether it's the chairman, whether it's other parts of local football, you know, inclusion can't happen unless if people step up and raise their game and recognise where that bar is, but actually do everything possible to go beyond that bar. That bar is just something you see, but you should always aim for excellence. So it's about working above that bar. The plan in itself is great in writing, but if we don't monitor its effectiveness and be transparent around our reporting and sharing progress in the public domain, then people will think that we still, you know, the game hasn't moved on. So that's something we're committed to. And how that actually happens is that we report into government around our results. And also, you know, when we produce the plan, we try and push it out as widely as possible. And I'll make sure going forward, certainly all of you are part of that network. So each time we provide updates on our progress, I think it's important that UK chaplaincy see what football is doing around sort of discrimination and inclusion. Communication is key. It's all part of instilling confidence. If you don't tell your story and own that story, then others will make it up for you. It's as simple as that. And as you all know, whether it's football or sport generally in this country, it's become a commodity. And so therefore, it's so important that, you know, you continue to kind of push some good stories out there, particularly around interventions that are in place, so that you can, you know, provide a positive image out there that if you want to work in football or you want to work in sport, there are opportunities, but it's knowing where those opportunities are, and that's what certainly, you know, we're committed to. Now, some of the key things from our side in terms of what sets out in that action plan are these. I'm not going to go through them all, but I'll pick out one or two which are quite key. Paul, as you know, Elliot earlier, very engaging, passionate. And why wouldn't you have him on your board? Simple as that. But he's one of many. And their role that really is to guide our work, to be advocates for us. So Paul does quite a lot of stuff outside of the board meetings in terms of providing updates to the wider community around football's work. We have a fantastic chair in Heather Rabatz, who's an independent. She's a FA board member, and she's very independent. You know, when we get it spectacular wrong, she will tell us. And that's what you want from somebody who's passionate about what they do, wants to make sure that the game moves in the right direction. But her role as chair is to police what we do as executives, from the board to the chief exec and everybody that works within our organisation. So she does that in a very sensitive way, but she will, she'll make it clear if we don't do things correctly, she'll tell us, and that's what you want. Another key programme for us, which are linked together, the bursary programme and the mentees programme, is really providing opportunities for individuals who want to get involved in football, particularly around coaching. I don't know whether many of you know this, but certainly the coaching workforce that currently exists within English football, that's not just in grassroots, this is also in terms of the professional sphere, does not reflect the number of black and Asian players that currently play the game. So it's really important that we're providing opportunities through bursaries. Again, coaching qualifications, cost a lot of money. And so therefore, you know, there's certain individuals who feel that why invest in myself if there's no job for me at the end of it? Well, this is what this program, you know, is aiming to do, is providing bursaries and also coaching opportunities through experience so that when a job opportunity comes up, they're on the same level playing field as everybody else. The Women's Leadership Program is a program we've just recently launched, and it's exactly that. It's aimed at women and it's for women, but the actual applicants to this program are men. The men are sponsors of these women. We can't have gender equality or gender parity if we don't work with men. And that's been one of the issues around sort of developing women-only specific programs. Obviously, this particular program is aimed at talented women who are able and capable to be board of directors, because we need to change the makeup of those club boardrooms as well, including the FA. To do that, we need to ensure that we're equipping, we're supporting these women with a program. And so we've worked in partnership with the Institute of Director on that. But also take along the male sponsors with us. And they've got their own mini program that sits alongside it, because their role is to provide those boardroom opportunities. So you've got the learning, the support, and hopefully once they graduate, those boardroom opportunities will exist because they've had somebody sponsoring them. And finally, On Board is a fantastic program. It's one that we work in partnership with the PFA. It's actually the Professional Football Association's program. We support it because we believe in it. And again, it's mixing up or trying to create opportunities around local club boardroom. So these are principally county FAs, mid-sized clubs, again, to provide individuals with those opportunities to sit around the table. But it is a governance-centred programme. So, you know, it's a six-month-long programme. They understand, you know, what it is to be a board member, basically. It's highly successful. We're very pleased about it. It's continued this season as well, and long may it continue. In terms of grassroots football, I've talked about the importance and the significance around reporting discrimination. But it's not just about reporting. It's also making sure that we gather relevant statistics and to be transparent about that. And year on, year on, and certainly over the last 3-5 years, racism has been the one area of significance. But what's also very concerning, albeit we are aware of it, there are other areas around sexual orientation, around faith and religion, and it's important that we understand that data and configure our programs and messaging accordingly. That's why the stats are really quite key. We have local inclusion advisory groups as well at county FAs. They exist to support local football delivery, particularly county FAs, with diversifying their decision-making, but also to bring the community along with them around the way they deliver their football offer. Another area that I will touch upon is around Asian talent ID and scouting. As you know, again, there's very few, particularly in the professional sphere, Asian players. And it's important that, you know, we have a way of tracking and picking up talent, particularly Asian talent, not only developing and making sure our scouting workforce are diversified, but to make sure that that talent is nurtured and it's on the right way within the pathway. So, you know, we're putting a lot of emphasis on that. But most of all, with you know, the significant change over the last season around grassroots football is that now we're putting much more people resources in the national game. So there is somebody who's very it's equivalent to my role, but works in our participation and development division, and his role is really to embed inclusion. That's something we never had before, but he's a go-to resource for anyone that's working in grassroots. In terms of the emerging areas that we're also looking at, yesterday was World Mental Health Day, and for the last 2 years we've done some work around that. I know that Michael Bennett from the PFA, as head of player welfare, you know, that's a lot of what he, well, it's not only, but certainly a significant part of his work and fantastic work that he does around that. We still need to be open and talk about some of the very difficult areas in football, which, you know, whether it's players, administrators, coaches, referees, still find very difficult, and yet we work in a very, very intensified sport, and yet there aren't enough mechanisms for people to be themselves. What is important to try and get across, and so that the stigma doesn't continue, that people's understanding of mental health and well-being is not what's played out in the public domain, particularly around individuals like Gaza, because, you know, people do need support, but for support to be given, we need to create a climate and a culture where people can openly talk and have a go-to place. Another area, which I was talking to some colleagues over at lunch, is around colour blindness. It's quite interesting and very fascinating, this area, and this is a piece of work that we're working with UEFA on. I don't know whether many of you know in the room, in terms of the stats that's involved around this, 1 in 10 men has a colour deficiency, and 1 in 200 women have a colour deficiency. And that colour deficiency, it's around red, green and blue. Now, if you think about it, these are quite predominant colours in sport, generally. And to quantify that, if we were to take Wembley as being a 90,000-seater stadium, if there was an evacuation that was reliant on colour coding, there will be 6,000 people in that stadium that will find that challenging. 6,000 people. Now, obviously, this is a spectrum of colour deficiency. Another example to bring that to life is that, obviously, all clubs have their colours. So if we were to take, for example, Liverpool and Arsenal, which are predominantly red, let's say Liverpool for argument's sake, in terms of spectators or armchair fans, people watching the game from home, public places, if you've got the deficiency of red, what you see is not a red. But if it's red shirt, red short and red socks, what you do see is floating people, because you can't see that red in the same way as a normal vision red person could see. So that's why it's important that football looks at this a little bit more. And I've been asking questions around screening. A lot of what we need to do is have the conversations, is to raise awareness, much in the same way at lunchtime in my table. You know, conversations just automatically sparked. And that's what, you know, what we're trying to do with this particular agenda. But across all the varying facets within inclusion, is to create a climate and a safe environment where people can just talk. Because it's through those conversations that actually, not only you recognise you're not alone, but there's also strength in terms of being able to make connections with other people. And so therefore, the conversations around inclusion within the sport context is fundamental. Finally, another area that we're looking at, particularly for this season, is about disability access, particularly around stadium access and sight lines for disabled fans and supporters. We've made a short film around that, and hopefully we'll do some work towards spring around that. So moving on, before we get to the interactive bit, in terms of the work that we do with the English Football League, for argument's sake, we've developed an education programme for their clubs. I'm very pleased about it, and it's great that Bolton were able to road test it as a pilot. Certainly has got very good feedback, which I'm really pleased about, and I'll share you aspects of that after this slide. But there are some fundamental things that happened last season that I think it's important to share with you. The Football League have agreed to a recruitment code for their clubs, and what that means is for us, when I say for us, for football and for sport generally, to start making a difference around the makeup and the demographics of people who work and volunteer within football or sport. in that sense, but certainly in this case for football, there is an agreement in place where, as part of certain roles, like the manager's job, some key backroom staff jobs, where in the shortlist, the long and short of it is that the shortlist needs to be diverse. It needs to be a diverse in order to draw the best talent through. So that doesn't mean to say that we're ticking the box and positively discriminating and providing jobs to individuals because of, you know, their colour or whatever. But it's about making sure there's a level playing field. Because if we don't put that intervention in place, then we will never get to a place where we are diversifying the decision making. So that's something that all of the 72 clubs have agreed to, and likewise the FA as well, in order to start affecting some of the roles that are part and parcel of our squads, particularly the men's senior squad. We have three mentees from a diverse background over the next year are following or being supported by people like Gareth and Dan Ashworth, Gareth Southgate, and some other backroom staff. So we're providing them those opportunities. So when roles and jobs come up, they're able to challenge for them on a level playing field. Another key part of the work we've done with the English Football League is called State of Play. State of Play is a diversity monitoring tool. Its aim is one of the questions over the last couple of years has been, what is the demographics of football? Nobody knows. What we do know is what we see, but that's not enough to know anecdotally in terms of who works in the game. So last season we started that job. We basically monitored through diversity questions, that is, so it's an online tool. We surveyed the 72 clubs. The FA was part of that. The 50 county football associations were that. We yielded 4,000 responses. So we have a sense of what that sphere looks like. We're going to continue that with phase two by auditing the Premier League clubs, the League Managers Association and the managers. We're still having discussions with the PFA on that, and hopefully they'll come on board with that. But hopefully, by the end of this season, we'll get a very clear picture demographically of the number of women who work in the game, BME representation, so we can configure our football offer, our programmes, our interventions in the right way, which is informed by data. Because data never lies, it is what it is, and what's the point of gathering data if you're not going to use it to inform what you need to do, period. So that's what that programme's about. Playing for Inclusion is that education programme that I've been talking about, and, you know, like I said, we road tested it with Bolton, we've continued to roll it out, it's been well received, and I'd like to share with you aspects of that this afternoon. So what you're going to watch in the next, 15 minutes, is a series of four films. And what they're trying to do through these films is challenge people's understanding of what we mean by what equality, diversity and inclusion mean. These three terms mean different things, and yet they're used very loosely. You know, one is about sort of infrastructure and cultural change. One is about people. One is about bringing those differences together. But in understanding those terms, you also need to understand what it means in the context of the legal framework and within the Equality Act of 2010. And that act protects nine personal identities. And if you infringe that, that's certainly you're breaking the law. So we do talk about the legal framework as well. Everybody knows there's a moral and a legal argument towards inclusion. But more important, very few focus on benefits. That's massive benefits around inclusion. You know, if you have a difference, if you were around the table and they were all made up of different characteristics, the likelihood is you'll get to a better solution. If you have people who look the same around the table, the solution will be limited. It wouldn't give you that sort of diverse, rich of experience and conversations that's required. That's why the benefits is fundamental in terms of when, you know, when we talk about inclusion, we need to embrace it in the context that there are huge benefits to it as well. But with that comes dignity and respect. You know, in order to recognise and embrace the benefits of inclusion, you also need to you know, be respectful of others. So we talk about the importance of dignity as well. Probably the one biggest area within inclusion to deal with is about challenging inappropriate language and behaviour. We know on the field of play, particularly Sunday, Saturday league football, the language is very industrial. We are trying to change that, but you can't legislate for people's behaviour. But what we can all do is take personal responsibility around challenging inappropriate behaviour. So that's a key element that comes out through the film. Again, bullying, harassment and banter, all very, very subtle, can be delivered very subtly, but has huge impact on individuals. So we look at that. And also to discuss the impact of discrimination. I know certainly Paul is very good about talking around impact. And, you know, people's personal stories are really, really important to convey that impact across. But also some things to be mindful of around stereotyping assumptions, which is either born out of ignorance, born out of, you know, your own personal setting. That doesn't mean to say that you makes you X, Y, and Z. It's just because, you know, that's just the way it is. But what's important is to challenge yourself and not to reinforce stereotypes. So without much further ado, I will introduce the first film, which is called Mad Max. Please stay with me on this film. You'll see how it all plays out.
Time. So you do realise that one in four of our season tickets is female. I mean, what do they want with new title. We're trying to move the signs here. Look a bit more professional. Like young Dinelli has been telling me. Apparently we're about to launch a new website.
This is Colin, as he says catering. He's a bit prickly at the moment. He read about Justin Down a few weeks back about his food from the directors. We had a team up from the Midlands and there was a lot of Asian lads, supporters, asking about halal and Colin. Didn't even have that on his radar. Janelle's quite new to us, working in corporate communications. Quiet. Seems nice though.
Pete's asked me to sit in on this meeting for him. He's talk everyone through the ideas of the new website. Well, just to get your views, really.
Apologies. Running late.
David, club secretary.
Slow than you lot. A bit like the new plans for the new website, to be honest.
No,
neither. I'll go and do anything but walk with the rest of these lads.
Trust you, Gary. I thought we had to have done your joke for at least a minute. Just ignore him, love, he'll go away.
But I'm not going away. We spend so much money and time on this new website. Do you know, if you ask me, all this technology...
Oh, I'm not a great one for technology either, but with my support and liaison hat on, I do know the disabled group have been complaining for months now that their landing screen, is that what you call it, isn't working.
Yeah, I've picked up on that. There's been loads of postings on the message board this weekend, and some of them are really quite angry.
Landing screen? Seriously? Whatever then.
So the disabled group don't know, don't they?
I've just seen that. Oh, no, don't you stop. Gary's bad enough.
It's not right, is it? Not right, not right. The old man was only joking. Well, it isn't right, is it? Not right at all. This,
what?
This, the left-hand side of your body, but it's not right. You. Excuse my French, ladies. If there's anyone not right here, it's you. Come on, mango. Show me some love. Get off me, you big puff. He's wearing a scarf and a set of lemons. What? Scrub the arse on this one.
Boys, boys, just leave the one line for those who can actually deliver them, eh?
I can't speak.
They're only messing, Max.
What are these things doing in the privacy of their own homes? It's nothing to do with them. I don't suppose any of you lot have seen the paper this morning.
Oh, no. It's not about the online ticketing for next week's match, is it?
It's Max, the groundsman. Mad Max, we call him. He's always on his high horse about something or other. Not long ago to hospital, something to do with his heart. High blood pressure, apparently.
What? Mercury 76 is fine for not stopping at your wayside.
Dog eats beehive and lives to tell the tale. We've always painted on.
Yes. Oh, NHS spends $4 million on translation services. And? What do you mean, Ange?
Three deeds. Bloody hell, Miss Russell was here. Over £4 million spent on translation services because of the growing number of migrants in the country. We have had over, what's it say, 70 different languages that have been translated. It's hard working families like our supporters. Taxpayers like me and you are forced to stand by while the NHS spend our money on translation services for Adam the camel dealer. I was next to one of them in bed when I was in hospital the other month. How much tax do you think he paid, eh? He didn't need to translate what he wanted to be paid, I can tell you. I said to the nurse, we should encourage these migrants to learn English. She was English herself. I'm all for diversity and all that, but I've got a problem. £4 million. I can't speak. I think you just did, Max, all sort.
The world's changing, Max, and there's precious little we can do about it.
Come on, Max. Let me get you a cup of tea. You're going to make yourself poorly again if you don't calm down.
More than two, please.
You better get them a couple of biscuits, too. You'll need them.
What's happening?
Have you seen item 3? Staffing for our stand at the Butterfield Diversity Festival. Looks like we're the main sponsors this year.
I
You'll be pleased to know that all the rest of the film was not as long as that, but it's like with everything you see in terms of the next three, it's the conversations you have around what comes out of that. The films, as I said, are configured around the three-hour workshop, and I'll run past the others as we move on. Twitter, this one is quite an interesting one.
So, I said to the guy, it says on your menu that all dishes are served with chips, or most of them are stated. Yes, sir, he said. But as stated on the menu, the thigh is served with garlic bread and salad. It's fine, he said, but it doesn't say, but not with chips.
Go on then, what happened?
What do you think? Have we got the bread? There were quite a few of them, so only about three.
Don't you, mate? You've got to complain
something's not right. Quite as satisfying when you're receiving them, then.
Why, what do you mean?
Got this through yesterday from some dad who brought his little girl along to the game on Saturday.
Against Somerton?
Nice.
I wouldn't be bringing my little ones back to Andy's
pits. Me neither. I mean, they were in the family stand, but use your brain, fella, you know what I mean?
A bit of wine, is it?
A bit. I mean, to be fair, it's good that we get the feedback. We need it, don't we? So, you know what it's like. We've got a great club here, and we've got a great reputation for having a family-friendly stadium. You say you're getting these little flies in the ointment that could potentially leave a dirty mark.
How do you mean, then? What's his issue?
Well, according to this, he heard some choice language from the next text.
Choice language? Come on! It's a football match, for God's sake. Not a coffee morning. What does he expect?
I know, but I mean, he'd have his little one with him.
Why, what did she hear?
Well, at least she was oblivious to it, but that's not the point we're making. Some of the stuff that was being shouted was, he says, racist. And he said that there were a few people round and about who were also clearly not impressed with the language either. So, the thing is, we need to be seen to be doing something, whether he's right or not. And if the papers hear about it.
Well, there goes our great reputation. We'll be seen as the press box.
Precisely. Looks like Neil Clark got it.
Yeah,
we are actually, Clark. Didn't realise it had anything to do with marketing.
But it does now. He's been having a rant about us on Twitter.
Oh, for God's sake, you've got to be kidding.
Very hard, no. He's got all sorts of people following him now, giving it things like institutionalised racism, and of course they're racist. They're a football club.
It's not a club. We're not racist. Christ.
Well, that doesn't matter, does it? Once the press get wind of it, they're not going to let the truth get in the way of a good story, are they? Mm. Now, it seems like they're focusing on his point that he tried to raise it with a steward when he decided to leave, but couldn't get anybody's attention.
Ridiculous. I mean, this is all we need. I mean, our fans, they're salt of the earth. I'm asking for the other lot of mine. And I've got a right job on now with damage limitation and press statements, etc. Look, I'm sure it'll just be a storm in a teacup. But I want to get the facts straight before I get on the defensive. I mean, it can't be particularly offensive, otherwise I'm guessing it'd have been straight on the blog, where others would have been complaining too. Yeah, maybe it's just one of those sensitive types, eh? Yeah, what does the letter say? How bad was it?
Well, bad enough that he felt that he couldn't stay longer than the first 20 minutes.
And there's a bit kiddie with him, you see.
When we're playing Somerton? Here, better let me have a look at it. See exactly what his gripe is.
Make this the last one, is that better?
change the language, mate. All right.
What's the problem,
Alan? Nothing, sweetheart. It's all right.
It's not interesting at all.
No, no. It's just a bit exciting, that's all.
That's it! Walk away, you sub shot! Get up in order and have a swing on the golf course, you fucking won't get!
Look, I tell you what, John, let's just go, Sean.
It's only just started.
Yeah, no, never mind that. Let's go and see what Paul is doing, shall we?
I want to stay.
Come on, darling. Come on, I'm not asking you, sorry.
Just in the interest of time, I'm just very mindful to go towards the end of this. I mean, hopefully through those two films, you'll see what we're trying to do around education and raising awareness. I mean, the course is really aimed at individuals who work within a club setting. So it's not aimed at people who sort of have a role as a coach or a referee. We've got other programs for them. Around equality and diversity, but it is important that we get to within the operations of club management, which is why we developed this program. So in summarising, just for this afternoon, ultimately I think this picture says everything in terms of what fairness and inclusion is about, that in order to provide equality of opportunities for everybody, there are times you have to do things differently in order to give that opportunity and for equal access. So I hope you've taken a few ideas away in terms of, you know, the work that English football's trying to do, what the FA's trying to do, what we're trying to do around raising awareness and inclusion. Certainly we've done some work around faith and football. We have an advisory group that we formed, which Matt is part of, and really it's a go-to group for us, particularly around faith matters. We've produced a faith in football calendar. We've got some guidance around it, and there's more opportunities in terms of trying to look at that dimension of our work. Religion and faith is a protected characteristic within the law, and that's the case in point in terms of the work that we need to do around football, to recognise different faiths and religions, and it's those differences that make us better and stronger. Thank you.